We think a lot more about ourselves than anybody else does. And most people just don't care if you fail at something because they are not paying attention. So that's how I think about it. That doesn't mean I don't feel scared. I feel scared all the time. Once a week, I'm like, can I really do this? Can I really start a business again? And then I have to remind myself, I was 26 when I started my first business. And now I'm 34. So I have 8 years of experience. I have so much more exposure.
Welcome to the Brown Girl Podcast. This show was created to elevate the voices and perspectives of dual identity South Asians around the world. Here we have conversations on topics and issues that impact our community, as well as share the stories of personal successes and the struggles that often go unsaid. My name is Julie George, and I'm your host.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. I love today's conversation with my guest, Arshia Karani. I think today was one of my favorite conversations to date on this podcast. If you are listening and you are a brown girl or a brown guy, and you are someone who is really trying to carve your own path in life, you are multi-passionate, you're running businesses, you're doing community service, you're running marathons, whatever it is, if you like to have your toes in a lot of things because you want to invest in yourself in ways that make sense for you, this is the episode to listen to. I really encourage you to stay to the end. A little background about today's guest. Arshia is a leadership coach who partners with rising leaders with hyphenated backgrounds through her program, NIA Coaching. She's a storyteller and entrepreneur at heart and is a co-founder at Potluck Stories, an LA-based community organization that hosts monthly interactive storytelling events that amplifies underrepresented voices. Her past professional experiences include founding and operating a direct-to-consumer brand and holding various roles across digital media, strategy, and client experience. She lives in Southern California, loves green apples and chai, and gets out of bed every day to help people who hold multiple truths and identities live their best personal and professional why. So in today's episode, we talked about so many things, everything from pushing past fear, finding your confidence, living with intention, and finding your North Star. We talked about how to lean into this narrative of, quote, you're doing too much, and embracing pivoting and change in life's direction. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Here's Arshi. Are you okay with me calling you Arshi?
Yes.
Okay.
That's actually what I go by. It's Arshia, but I go by Arshi for short.
Okay, perfect. So I'm so excited to have you today. I think with this podcast, one of my main goals that I have is just to speak to the modern brown girl, maybe, you know, in her 20s, 30s, who's just trying to thrive and live life on her own terms and, you know, have the freedom to be her own self without pressure of our cultural and societal expectations. And, you know, I think so much of our culture is very quick to label nonconformity as like a misstep. You know, rather than like, wow, this person had the courage to take a leap of faith, try something new. And because of that, they've been able to uplevel their skills and their contributions to the world. And so I think like I want to speak to that person so that they can also feel empowered to own their own story, despite it looking different from others. And so I was really drawn to your backstory because you've done a lot of different things in your 20s and now early 30s between, you know, starting in like, I think, real estate, public housing, starting your own company, going back into the tech startups, into the startup space and coaching now, and probably like a bunch of other things in between that I'm missing. And I love meeting fascinating people with that kind of story. And so, yeah, I would love for you to just share with our audience who you are, what you're doing now, what your journey has looked like and what you're about.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Julie. I mean, I think you have a lot of those similar twists and turns that you both showcase in your episodes, but also you have a little bit. You're kind of one of those people who has a full-time thing and then does stuff on the side. And I think it really just speaks to exactly how you describe us. Like brown girls are really multifaceted. And I think literally what you said is your definition of like nonconformists and people who are trying to pave their own path and do something for the first time. That resonates with me so much. much. As you said, I'm in my early 30s, and it took me a minute to kind of lean into that brown girl that you described, which is this person who is trying to figure it out and navigate a new path for herself. And I think so much as brown girls, like for me personally, you know, my parents are immigrants, and I think about that, like how they paved a new path for themselves coming from India. But at the same time, the culture in my family and in my community was very like, go be that doctor, lawyer, worst comes to worst, like an engineer, maybe, you know, and like, if you're really deflecting the path, then you're going to end up in finance, you know? And for me, I don't know if I was just always this type of person as a kid who was like, if you tell me that that's what I'm supposed to do, like, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Or if like none of those things resonated with me totally. And maybe it's a combination of both of those things. But for me, I now work as a leadership coach. And literally my parents are like, What is that?
Yeah.
Like 2 days ago, my mom was like, so would I call you a business coach? I'm like, you know what? Sure. And so I think like now I do leadership coaching and I call it NEA leadership. And how I arrived at that was that I worked in corporate spaces for almost 15 years now. And I have found two things to constantly be true. And one is that workplaces are not always intentional about who they hire and what their culture is. And two, as an employee, we aren't taught to be intentional with our careers early. We're taught to make a certain amount of money and get a certain title. And NEA, as some of you may recognize that word, NEA means intention in Urdu. And I just love that word so much. And as I think about leadership and as I think about businesses growing and business outcomes, I'm like, you can't achieve anything wonderful and awesome, in my opinion, unless you are intentional about it. And so that's a little bit about my coaching business. And yeah, but my background is like, a little bit all over the place. I did start my career in finance, but on the affordable housing side, which also my family was like, what is that? And then I started my own business. I worked in marketing for a while, and kind of through some of these twists and turns, I've landed at leadership coaching and facilitation.
Got it. Cool. And then, so tell us a little bit about the company that you started, because I know we had talked about that offline. And I thought that was like such a cool initiative.
Yeah, so this was back in 2015, 2016. I was working for an organization in affordable housing, and I had just finished grad school. And so when I was in grad school, I was working full time in the daytime, and then I was in grad school at night. And so I really didn't have time to make friends. But the one thing that I did do is I joined a running group. And so I'm Muslim and I wear hijab. And I've always been really active, but since I had started wearing hijab, which was like in college, I hadn't really been active in like a social way. Like I would go to the gym by myself and then like come home. And so I never really thought about looking cute. But then when I joined this running group, it was actually like my only opportunity to like make friends, because I was super busy during the week. And this was like a Saturday morning running club. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is the only chance I get to see my classmates. And I felt really scrubby because like I used to wear like a bandana, or like I used to wear like my sister's old pregnancy clothes because like I needed to like dress modestly. And I was just like really like sad and stressed about like how I was going to look while I was running. And long story short, I ended up signing up for this like half marathon, and I was wearing this bandana, and my bandana like fell off during my race, and I had a hoodie on. So I like threw my hood on and I finished the half marathon, and like my time was great. And all my friends were like, oh my gosh, you did awesome. How did it feel? Whatever. And I was just kind of bummed because I was like, honestly, my bandana fell off, which was my hijab. It was kind of like, for if you don't wear hijab, it's kind of like if someone takes off your shoelaces while you're running, you feel floppy, you feel uncomfortable, you're trying to make sure that everything is in place. One of your like essential tools is no longer with you. And that's what that experience felt like for me. And so my friend was like, why don't you start your own hijab company? And I was like, I work in finance. Like I sit and put like numbers in little boxes all day, you know, I don't know how to do that. And at the same time, it kind of stuck with me. And it was kind of this like whole journey. And I lived in New York at the time. And so I started to literally just, I bought fabric from the fabric district. I started to like glue fabric together with fabric glue. Mm-hmm. And I ended up starting a company that was called Sukoon Active. It was an activewear company for Muslim women. We did hijabs and we did tunics for Muslim women to be able to access not just clothing, but really a lifestyle, and be able to access fitness and health and a community And I just learned so much during that. And I think even now when I, again, I mentioned I now run a coaching practice called Nia Coaching. And so much of what the leadership or even lack of leadership that mm-hmm. like I really learned the hard way is like why I now have landed where I've landed. Because, you know, I think for me, I just realized that when I was working on my direct-to-consumer brand, I loved being able to, one, give myself the tools that I wanted and you know, needed to like live an active lifestyle. But I loved building community. And I mm-hmm. loved talking to women who are like, oh my gosh, because of what you have designed with me in mind, I now get to do all these other things. Mm-hmm. And that's how I think about companies. That's how I think about leadership, that you have toolkits that are in place and they allow you to then do other things, especially as like, kind of going back to where we even started this conversation as brown girls, I think a lot of times we're doing a lot of different things. We have different interests and we don't always have examples of what that means for people like us because a lot of us are first generation. Our parents were immigrants and we're living in double culture. So we're living literally a different life at home than we are living at work or at school. And so I just think that that is a really, it's a really unique space. And in Nia, I love working with, I like to call us like hyphenated or hyphens. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we are people who have multiple identities and hold multiple truths and interests. And we're still trying to like pave that path forward.
Hey, podcast fam. I want to take a quick break to tell you about Pajama Sutra, a South Asian-owned loungewear brand on a mission to inspire women of color to lounge like a goddess. Pajama Sutra offers an exquisite range of loungewear that includes robes, caftans, rompers, pajamas, and matching mommy and me sets that bring luxury to your everyday life. All of their pieces are made of 100% cotton voile fabrics, block printed by hand, and free of harsh chemicals and dyes. Their robes are known for a fit and flare silhouette that flatters like a wrap dress, and it's no surprise that they were even selected as the official robe sponsor of the Miss Universe competitions 3 years in a row. Pajama Sutra also carries these amazing affordable gift boxes filled with South Asian-inspired treasures for any occasion. Think bridesmaid proposal boxes, birthdays, anniversaries, and more. Discover their full collection at www.thepajamasutra.com or check the show notes for more details. Use code BGPODCAST for 15% off. And now back to our episode.
And so just to close the loop for audiences, are you still active with Sukkoon or did you shut that down? What happened with Sukkoon?
Yeah, so Sukkoon is kind of the one that got away in my career. We hit a lot of, I did end up going full-time on Sukkoon, funnily enough, and I loved it. I mean, it was very hard, but we took a pretty big supply chain hit during COVID, and then I ended up moving into the marketing space. So I worked for an agency, I worked in-house for a brand before then kind of getting that entrepreneurial, I don't know, it sounds weird to say itch, but like it kind of is that. It's like, you know, that craving for wanting to build something. I love building things. And so I think for a minute, I thought I would never be able to do that again after Sukkoon. But I think for those of us who are like that, we always find a way to build again, even if it takes some time. Sure.
So in prep for this interview, I actually had Googled the phrase hijab activewear. And you'll be glad to know that Sukkoon was on the first page of Google.
Also.
Google searches also. Good job on the SEO.
Wow. Yeah. We, you know, the funny thing is like, I mean, it's not active. We don't have any inventory, but I haven't completely shut it down like from the website and stuff. It's been a bit of a slow process to almost, I mean, if I'm being honest, I think when you build something, it becomes so much a part of your identity that it takes some time. Like, yeah. And you like grieve it a little. Yeah. You know, I think for me, it's been like at some time of like grieving this thing that I really thought was going to be my life. And I think the other kind of interesting thing is for a lot of people in my life, like even in my professional life and in the entrepreneurial space, like I literally had a call the other day and I got on the call and she was like, wait, you're a Sukkoon girl. And I was like, yeah. And it makes me both happy, but it's also like a little bit sad for me sometimes because it was such a big part of my life. And so I don't know. I think for anyone listening who can relate, who has something that you've really poured your life into and it maybe hasn't worked out in the exact way that you dreamed that it might, I'm here with you. You know, I can super relate to that. And it kind of feels like heartbreak, literally like dating someone.
I bet. I mean,
yeah.
So, like, congrats and kudos to you on starting that and getting that initiative going, because the fact that now all these other big name brands like Lululemon and Old Navy and whoever else, you know, are now coming out with activewear for different cultures, I think is a testament to obviously the need for it. And also, you were literally like pioneering it. You were at the forefront because you were doing it before they got their stuff out there, right? So. Yeah,
I think something that was pretty cool about it, and this is really a narrative shift that I have made in the last probably like 2 years of my life, but I think what I really am grateful for is I got to be a part of a conversation, and I got to be one of the first people driving that conversation. And that is what's really cool about it, is like I started in 2015, 2016. It was literally, I don't know, I probably shouldn't say this, but whatever, it happened. Literally, Adidas reached out to us before we even put things to market. I know we had orders from other brands, really big brands, that then ended up releasing products like this, like a year after us. And so it's really interesting because even now, sometimes I look at that space and I'm like, it's still open. A lot of these big brands, they don't know how to speak to people like us. And I think that I keep really bringing it back to coaching, because I'm like, that's what I really learned through Sukuna, is that when you live into the things and the truths and the identities that are true for you, that is where you get to build uniquely. And that's where everybody else will jump on the bandwagon, you know? And so I focus on people, on coaching people who are in professional spaces who hold multiple truths. And I bet you in 5 years, every company is going to be like, we have hyphenated backgrounds or intersectional identity coaching. Like, I bet you that is just going to be a thing, you know? And so it's not always a good choice we make. It's, I guess the choice is not even always to build. It's just to like be and exist.
Yeah. You know, you've obviously ventured into a lot of different things. And I think the more that I talk to people one-on-one and have these kinds of conversations intimately with people, I think, you know, the more I see how common it is for people to be held back by fear and being afraid of putting themselves out there. And I know I've certainly felt that sentiment as well. How do you think the fear of starting some of these things, new things, has shown up in your life? And what has that journey of pushing past that fear looked like for you?
That's an awesome question. I think fear is natural and normal. I think something about fear is like, if we think just literally one step deeper of like, not just like, I'm scared, but if you try to answer the question for yourself of what you're scared of, it really helps you work through it, or at least that's how I think about it. So a lot of times when I'm trying something new, I think about reputational risk. That's something I never thought of before I started my direct consumer business, Sukoon. But I, as I said to you even a couple of days ago, or sorry, as I said to you earlier today, like the person I was speaking to was like a professional connection, and she was like, oh, you're a Sukoon girl, right? So there's a reputation that she's bringing with her for me, right? And I said to myself, is that a good thing that I'm a Sukoon girl, or a bad, like, you know, did she love my product, or did she hate it, or did she just see it on the internet, or did her friend tell her something about it? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of start going through that. And I think especially as brown girls, we're pretty connected. Our communities are connected. And so when I really think about fear, a lot of times for me, I'm scared of public failure. I'm not as scared of just failing by myself as I am of what people will think of the failure, because it just, it feels intimate in our communities. Like, it doesn't feel like I can go somewhere and really start fresh with lines of work that are interesting to me. So I think to answer your question, that's how I think about it. And I think pushing through it, like for me, I think especially on social media and stuff, it makes us feel like everyone's looking at us. But when I really zoom out, I think about a role reversal. I know intimately what probably maybe like 10 friends are like really doing in terms of where they work, where they live, and their job title. I've lived in like pretty big cities. I was in New York for most of my adult life. For the past 4 years, I've been in LA. So like, these are very transient cities. And so when I think about like most other people, I'm like, oh, I wonder if that person is still living in LA, or I wonder if that person's still living in New York, you know? And so I think about, I'm like, I don't recall their job title or their personal endeavor that they have either succeeded at or failed at. And I think that as I get older, that really reminds me of, we think a lot more about ourselves than anybody else does. And most people just don't care if you fail at something, because they are not paying attention. So that's how I think about it. That doesn't mean I don't feel scared. I feel scared all the time. Once a week, I'm like, can I really do this? Can I really start a business again? Like, can I really do this? And then I have to remind myself, I was 26 when I started my first business, and now I'm 34. So I have 8 years of experience. I have so much more exposure. I still have all this passion. And this time around, I am so much more excited about the process than I am the outcome. And I think that's like something I learned and has helped me with Payfear a lot, because with Sukun, I was literally 26 years old and I was like, okay, cool. Sukun's going to be a global activewear brand. And you have to be kind of unhinged sometimes to like be a founder. But I literally thought, I'm not kidding, I thought it was going to be that. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be competing with Nike. Like, I'm going to be the Nike of Muslim world for activewear. And like, I had to believe that to push that project forward. And now with coaching, maybe it's also because it's like, it is a little bit less specialized. But now I'm like, if once a week I can help someone through something, I'm a pretty happy person. And
yeah,
if I'm not doing this in 3 years, I'll be able to use these stories and these experiences to like do something else. And I'm like way less stressed about, will I be the CEO of my own company or blah, blah, blah in like 2027 or 20, you know, 2030, you know?
Yeah. 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 I love that you've had that perspective shift of not so focused on the outcome, but rather the process and the journey and getting to that destination. I love that. So we talked about fear. How do you think that people can build up their confidence to start something new or to put themselves out there?
This is like one of my favorite questions. I think that, you know, most of you listening, and myself included, have done like strengths and weaknesses exercises somewhere in life, either at school or at work. But one of the most recent shifts I've made, again, partially through coaching, is that I don't really think about myself or others in terms of strengths and weaknesses. I think about us as our superpowers. And I think that's different because I think a superpower is something that other people can point out in you or that you never really think about, or like something that comes really easily to you that doesn't come as easily to people. And so I'll give you an example. For me, people would always tell me at work or at parties or wherever I'd go, you have a great smile. You have a huge smile. Or like, you have a lot of teeth. Do you have more teeth than other people? Like literally people will say this to me, or you have really white teeth. What toothpaste do you use? This is like an opener at the grocery store, you know? And I never really thought about it. I was like, cool. And then I started noticing it. And I was like, actually, other people don't smile as much as I do. But that's just like, I've always been that way. And what I realized is that in a professional setting or even a social setting, me being a smiley person invites conversation and it emits warmth. And even right now, there's like a little bit of me that's like, this sounds weird to say about myself. But once you acknowledge this about yourself, you can start to be like, okay, well, what does that allow me to do? What does that invite? Right. And like, all of a sudden, then, like, if we go back to this idea of confidence and building self-confidence, like, I realized, like, wow, like, this is something that's really easy for me. So this invites conversations, which makes it really easy for me to connect with people, which means that I'm really good at running meetings or de-escalating conflict or being in an awkward social situation and, like, breaking the ice. These are things that like, I can do because of this superpower that I have, which is my smile, which I had never thought about before.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more I do those things, right, the more I can make a joke, like, and just laugh myself in an awkward social situation or a work situation, the more I'm like, that confidence builds. And so I would really encourage you to think about what is something that comes really easily for you that other people might have noticed, or that you're just like, this is super easy for me, but my sister struggles or my best friend struggles with this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then, like, it's so much easier to build confidence on something that you're already good at doing and just like doing it a little bit more.
Yeah. 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 I think oftentimes the internet can have us thinking that someone else has all the confidence and courage in the world. But the reality is that most people that you admire online have had their own journey of getting to where they are today. And, you know, they oftentimes have the same insecurities and vulnerabilities and fears that you do. But
yeah,
I found that like most people have built up their confidence over time. Like it's not, yeah. I don't think that confidence is necessarily something that everyone is just born with. But I do think confidence is something that can be built over time by taking a series of leaps and calculated risks. And I think proving to yourself that you can do that hard thing. And every small triumph, you know, comes with a little bit more ease and confidence for tackling the next hard thing and so on and so forth. And I think there's like a cumulative impact that's so powerful. It's like compounding interest, you know, at the bank or whatever. It's like every small increase in confidence it's not only adding to the previous thing, it's building upon it. And there's that exponential growth that can create that really strong foundation of confidence and like belief in yourself. And I'm sure you've probably feel that way too from all the different things that you've done throughout your 20s and especially after Sukkun to like where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is about the reps. And I think it's also, especially in the founder space, you kind of hear about all these successful 25-year-old or 28-year-old or 30 under 30, Forbes 30 under 30 or whatever. And it's like you kind of start to idealize these insane levels of success defined by other people, but at really young ages. And the funny thing is, like, for sure, there's aspects that I miss of being in my 20s, but I love being in my 30s because I just don't care so much about like what other people 100%. Say. And, as a brown girl, literally most of my family is, they're just like one giant doctor. That's what I always like joke about. And they really don't understand that much about my line of work. But that lack of validation used to bother me way more before. And now I'm just kind of like, that's okay that you don't understand it because I couldn't do what you do. I couldn't go into an emergency room every day and help people. And I now know that they couldn't go into a boardroom and help people prepare for like an investor pitch in the way that I can, you know?
Yeah.
And so like these things are, and I never had that clarity before, you know, and that's like exactly what you're saying is that confidence, it just builds. It's a slow process. And hopefully that really will be different in the next generation. You know, like I have nieces, like my oldest niece is 14 and I'm like, I see like a little bit of a difference in how they're being raised and taught and still valuing culture, but also being given some more space and grace earlier in life to like explore their superpowers, you know?
Yeah. I was having a conversation with my aunt over Christmas break when I was visiting home and we were talking about my podcast and she was like, they don't really understand it, you know? And she was like, so what do you get from it? Do you get something?
Oh my God.
Do you get money? Like, no, but it's okay. Let's just move on to another conversation. But anyways, also I love that you said you love your 30s because I also really love my 30s. And I think we have this idea before you turn 30 that once you turn 30, it all goes downhill. And honestly, I couldn't be happier. I feel like I'm thriving so much more in my 30s because I just have such a greater sense of who I am and like just a greater sense of self-assurance. And I just don't care the same way, you know, like in your 20s, you're just navigating so many different things. Like you're trying to figure out who you are. There's just so many things that you place a lot of unnecessary mental load and energy on. And I feel like once you get into your 30s, you kind of just let go of some of that stuff and just are able to have better laser focus on the things that truly matter. But anyways.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, you said it like so well. Exactly.
Okay. So, you know, you are focusing on coaching people who have coaching leaders who have hyphenated identities. I think oftentimes, you know, if you're someone who is doing a lot of different things, you hear the phrase, you're doing too much, quote unquote, from others. And it tends to have a negative connotation. So how do you think people can reframe this feedback and use it as like a positive force for personal and professional growth? Like, how do you think people can lean into that concept of, quote, doing too much?
Yeah, I started laughing when you were asking that question because somebody was saying it to me very recently. And it was like one of my really good friends, but I was just like, I literally kind of like, I didn't snap, but I was just like, I started laughing and I was like, I never tell you that you're doing too little.
Yeah.
You know, and I said that and it's honestly something that kind of clicked for me personally because I had kept on thinking that every time I would hear that from people, I would always have that snarkiness in my brain of like, who are you to tell me what too much is? Who are you to define what too much is? You know, and it would be considered so offensive if I kept telling me that you're doing too little, that you're not enough.
Right.
And so I think that has really helped me just in general of being like, too much is a relative term. And I think for me, I think that's something that coaching has really helped me with. So something that I do, and I have like a free resource on my website too that you can grab if you're interested, but it's a checklist for hyphenated leaders. And a lot of what I focus on specifically with people like us who hold multiple truths, multiple identities, and like I think hyphenated can also mean multiple projects, right? We're just dynamic people, is that like no matter what you're doing, you should have your why should be your North Star. So there should be some connection between all of these micro things that you do. And so for me, like what that really looks like is I think people can say like a vision board or affirmation boards can be kind of cheesy, but it really is important to have a direction for your life. And so I literally, even for this year, I made a 2023 vision board. I did on like a poster board, like physical poster board. And then I did one for
2024.
Oh, sorry, for 2024. You're right. 2024. Exactly. And then I made one for January and then I made one for February just now. I think for me, the reframing comes with making sure that everything that I'm doing and everything that I'm working on is aligning to that personal why. And so I can give you an example. So I do my coaching and facilitation full time through NIA, but I also run a different organization, which kind of is like a layer of what I do in coaching, but it's called Potluck Stories. And it's a story-based organization that a couple of friends and I started last year. And our goal was to like tell stories, make friends, and uplift people of color in their stories. And we did 10 events in our first year, and we would just like rent out cool coffee shops and host like story events. So a couple of people would get up and tell stories around a theme, and then we'd have like hangouts, and I would sometimes design like some icebreaker type of activities. And this is something that so many things that we've talked about relate to. So like, one, my family is like, what's the point? Like, yeah, do you make any money? And I'm like, well, we break even. We don't lose. You know, and I'm like, that's not the point. Our point was to like have fun, throw events, kind of throw a party,
build community,
like, meet people, build community, you know? And then the secondly is like, you're doing too much. Like you should be focusing only on your coaching thing. Mm-hmm. You should not be like, this is like a lot of work to not make money and to not be promoting your business, you know? And for me, I go back to my personal why. My personal why is connecting people, bringing out their best, and getting them to like connect, helping them connect to ideas that inspire them. And I get to do all of that through both coaching and I get to do that through my monthly storytelling. And I just get to do them in different formats, you know? So does that mean that sometimes I am objectively doing too much in terms of like I have overcommitted my week? Sometimes, like, but to me, that's not doing too much in the way that people comment on it. It's me not being great at time management. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, you know, not setting boundaries with myself and my time and my schedule. Right. But those are different things, right? And I think like that's why the way that you communicate with yourself is so important, because you aren't always reframing. Like, reframing doesn't mean that you're reframing for other people. It means you're reframing for yourself. Mm-hmm. And as long as you have like, you know, I know I touched on a lot of different things, but I think as long as there is that North Star of this is the thing that is connecting all these other things, then like, you, it's up to you to like do whatever you want to do that makes you happy and fulfill your personal why and your North mm-hmm. Star.
Yeah, I love that. And I know we had touched on this offline, but you know, where you get asked from people like, okay, Arshi, what if you just went all in on one thing? How do you think people can balance pursuing multiple passions without succumbing to that external pressure to just focus on one?
Yeah, I think a lot of times that advice is coming from people who haven't really taken that many risks in their life.
Yeah.
And so as somebody who has taken those risks, I have like really learned to not take that advice very seriously, because that's not a person that I'm trying to be like.
Right.
And so, for example, you know, exactly what you said, like people tell me like, oh, why don't you go all in? Like, why didn't you go all in on Potluck Stories? Or now that you're doing coaching, why don't you drop Potluck Stories and only do coaching? And the way that I answer that for myself is like two things. One, I was 26 as a founder, and I did go all in, right? I went all in on my business. Like, I put all my savings into it. I quit my job. I worked out full time for 3 years. So I literally did put all of my eggs in that basket, and it didn't pan out for me in the way that I thought it would, right? So I have a lived experience that really informs the type of risk that I'm willing mm-hmm. to take, first of all, right? Somebody random telling me like go all in on something doesn't know the risk that I've already taken and endured and overcome and reset from, right, just over the last 5 years. The second thing is that I think, kind of building on that, is that I think if I could do it all over again, I actually would have done Sukoon as a side thing. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Is that one, I don't know, I think this is like partially just like capitalism and the way that we're raised in the society, but like we are often told exactly what success looks like. But success can look really different for different people. So you could have a brand that makes you $200,000 a year, or you could have a brand that makes you $5 million a year. But you get to decide what that looks like, right? And so when I think about it, for me, for Nia coaching versus Pollock Stories, I'm like, Nia coaching is something that I enjoy doing, but really sustains me from an economic perspective. Pollock Stories is something that allows me to have a creative outlet, build community, and have a lot of fun in a different way that's not work related. And when I thought about it, I was like, I actually don't want to turn Pollock Stories into the thing that I depend on for money.
Right.
And the thing is that somebody looking at you can be like, you should do this for money. Mm-hmm. And you are the only person that should be deciding that for yourself. Or like maybe you and your spouse or, you know, your partner or like if you have specific family responsibilities. But that's the thing is like, I really think that this doing too much thing is it's a very prominent rhetoric in brown communities. And it kind of goes back to that thing I was saying at the beginning, which is like, most of our parents took crazy big risks. They moved to a country where they didn't know anyone. And then a lot of them didn't take that many risks after that.
Right.
You know, and we kind of have this privilege actually as I think a generation where our parents took the ultimate risk and now we get to take different ones. And sometimes that risk is doing a lot of things. You know, we don't have to keep our head down pointed in one direction because our parents did that and laid a foundation for us to exist differently
in
community in the U.S.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think it also just goes back to what you said earlier about really understanding your why and having that sense of self-awareness around that, you know, like making sure you understand your reasons for why you're doing these different things. And they're all pointing to that North Star, which is your why. I want to pivot and talk about pivoting. How has the term pivot played a role in your own personal journey? And in each of these times that you pivoted, how did you know that it was time to pivot?
I wish I was always wise enough to know when to pivot. Sometimes it's like a forced hand, you know?
Yeah.
But yes, I have made quite a lot of pivots in my career. So I've kind of touched on each of these, but as a refresher, I started in affordable housing and finance, and then I moved out of real estate into running my own direct-to-consumer business in clothing. So I like ran supply chain. I would like travel to Portugal and meet with suppliers.
That was Sukoon, right?
That was in Sukoon, yeah. And then I worked at an agency, right? I worked at a marketing agency where I then worked with, I started working with a couple $100,000 brands and moved all the way up to working with like $50 million brands at an agency. And then I worked at a fintech company, and now I do coaching. So yes, I don't even know. Can you count what, like 8 pivots or something? But I think, you know, the thing is that with pivoting, I don't think that there always is an exact right time. But I think for me personally, you know, for me, it's like a gut thing.
Yeah.
But let me give you an example. So like from working at an agency to going in-house at a brand, that wasn't a really big pivot, right? That was more so I've learned a lot in an agency and now I can go work and do kind of the same stuff, but for one company. But then at that company, I got laid off. So they had overcommitted with their marketing budget should be. You know, I got laid off within a pretty short amount of time. It was like within 6 months. I kind of knew what was coming because of the budget reductions that kept on happening in my marketing budget. Right. And so that's an example of a pivot that didn't really make sense. Like I didn't want to necessarily leave. I wasn't ready to leave. When I signed on to that job, I really had seen myself there for like at least a year, if not a couple of years. And then when I got laid off, I kind of spiraled a little bit. Right. So sometimes pivoting can look like that. You just continue on the pivot and there's no end.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. And again, even though I knew it was coming and it was like an economic decision, it was a very hard thing to be like, well, now what do I do? Like, I just went through so much interviewing to get this job.
Right.
And then that's when I pivoted formally into coaching. And how that happened for me was that I have been doing like startup mentoring and coaching and facilitation work for like almost free or very small stipends since I got into the startup space. And then I had like a couple of marketing clients that I was freelancing for basically after I got laid off. And what started happening is that I would be hired in for marketing. But because I have such broad experience across so many different things, I would end up doing a lot of coaching that was not related to marketing. Mm-hmm. And I realized that that was actually my preference. And that because I have this like very technical hands-on marketing experience and very technical finance experience, that I actually, unlike a lot of other coaches and mentors, I know all the other things that are happening in that business owner's head. So I'm not just talking marketing. I'm like, hey, are you stressed because of your supply chain? Or is there a line in your P&L that you need to reduce or that's like causing specific stress? Or are you not able to retain top talent? And because of that, it's just like one day something clicked and I was like, I'm much more holistic than just marketing. And then that pivot started to slow down, right? But for a couple of months, I was literally spiraling until I like made this decision probably 4 or 5 months later that actually this consulting thing that I'm doing is not just a gap, like a placeholder. It's actually something that I want to do, you know? And you know, I share all that because I think especially our generation and in this economy, layoffs are so prominent, or strikes. Like I live in LA. There was a time this year where I think one out of every two people I met literally didn't have a job, you know, because of all the strikes and all the layoffs.
Right.
And I think sometimes those pivots are intentional. Sometimes they're curveballs that are thrown at you. And I think the best thing that you can do for yourself is to keep going back to this. But like, if you know the things that make you feel alive, if you know your superpower, if you know your North Star, like your personal why, then no matter what you do next, it's going to, there will be like a story for yourself there. And there will be like a thread that links all of these things as long as you are making sure that there's a link between all these things.
Yeah, for sure. I love that you said it often comes down to a gut thing. You know, like I used to do health coaching a few years ago and I really loved it when I first started. And it was always like a side thing. But I think after some time, I really started to feel like this wasn't my purpose anymore. And I really struggled with the idea of quitting and quote pivoting because I'm like, well, I'm not a quitter and I don't want other people to think I'm a quitter. And I was getting caught up thinking about all the sunk costs of time that I spent getting all these certifications and building a website and all this stuff. But the reality was I really felt like I was just forcing that part of my life. And there were so many other, and I knew that there were other projects and things that I did feel excited about that I could be spending more, more of my time and creative energy on and making progress on. And it wasn't until I was able to really let go of health coaching that I started to, you know, see a lot of growth with the podcast, for example. Like I was also doing the podcast, but I'm like, I want to do more of the podcast, but I can't do more of the podcast. I'm doing this health coaching thing. And like, I was able to dive into this other dating community that I started with my business partner and where we do events and other matchmaking type activities. And like that alone has been so life changing. And so I just and I think that wouldn't have been able to come to fruition had I decided not to pivot and like let go of health coaching. But like you said, that was an experience that I was able to build upon, and the experiences and the things and the skill sets that I learned doing health coaching, I still was able to carry that onto the next thing, you know? So
And like this comes, like there's so many things that are coming together in this section of like this conversation, because literally it's intuition, because you have, and it comes back to like confidence too. For me, I felt the same way. I was like, oh, I have these technical skills in marketing that I rebuilt after like leaving a career in finance, you know, and now I have this whole other technical skill set and I'm leaving it to do coaching. But the thing is that for me, my heart isn't in like just sitting behind a Facebook platform building ads anymore. I know how to do it. I've mastered it. I'm not one of those people who wants to just sit there and do that all the time. I want to use that. I want to use my skills and do the next thing. And everyone around me is like, what are you doing? I'm not kidding. My parents to this day are like, are you sure you don't want to just go work in finance or affordable housing again? And I'm like, I genuinely loved my time in that space. Like I worked in real estate for actually almost 8 years. I loved it, but it's no longer where I get joy and also where I feel like I can contribute the most anymore, you know? And it's really interesting. I did a workshop yesterday with one of my good friends. Her name is Katie Quesada and she teaches storytelling. And one of my favorite things that she says, and she actually has this awesome course that I recommend, but one of the things that I love that she says is you are not one story. You are a collection of evolving narratives. And so the story that you tell about yourself doesn't have to stay the same because you're not staying the same. And I think that's something that, like, we all struggle with. Even for me, like even in this conversation, I've struggled a little bit because I'm like, Sukoon is a really big part of my story, but it's not the only story that I have. And I am in the process of rewriting my story or extending my story or writing a new chapter. And we don't think about our own lives like that all the time, but we get to do that. And we get to choose the stories that we tell about our work, passion, about doing too much or doing enough for ourselves to feel sustained and feel alive.
Yeah, I love that. I'm such a big believer in this idea of like owning your story and that you are not attached to one identity forever. You have the ability to rewrite your story, you know, whatever it is. It could be as silly as something like, I'm not a runner. If you want to be a runner, you can be a runner. You just need to go outside and run half a mile and then you're a runner. And it's that mindset shift that's going to help you evolve and have the power to rewrite your identity.
Exactly.
I feel like I could literally talk to you forever.
I mean, likewise. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So I want to wrap up soon, but I want to ask you just like one or two more questions. So one thing that I came across about you on the internet as I was preparing for this interview was a really interesting article that you co-wrote for Medium called Navigating Chaos as a Millennial. And you and the other author, you talked about four main guiding principles for navigating chaos, which included leaning into your why, building your monkey bars, feedback is your BFF, and not all advice is good advice. And so the one that really stood out to me was building your monkey bars. So it's an interesting tagline. I'd love for you to touch on that concept. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I wrote this article with my friend Solon Teal, and I can't remember exactly how we got to that working that title, but Solon is a new dad. He now has two kids, and both of us have had this kind of roller coaster ride through startups and consulting and marketing and operating. And I literally think we were just thinking about we were talking about Solon's kids at the playground, and I think his older kid had just done monkey bars for the first time. And basically the TLDR of this section is that, you know, it kind of builds off of that lean into your why. So I've talked a lot about that in this episode, right? But I think the easiest way to explain it is like, if I today want to be the chief marketing officer, let's just say, like I want to be like a C-suite executive at, let's just say like a huge company like Apple, if that's my goal, right? I can't get from that, from like where I am today, if I'm like just like an associate somewhere to being that C-suite executive in my next job, right? And so everything that we do is a stepping stone or like a monkey bar, right? Because we have to climb. We have to get there, you know? And so I think like that's one way to look at it. The way that Solon and I talk about it in the article a lot that we wrote is that you don't know always exactly how you're going to get to the place that you're going. But like there's usually a rung that can get you closer, right? And so that's that same idea. And for Solon and actually like the way that we met is that I was starting my organization called Potluck Stories. I literally just like put up on Instagram, and one of my friends from college responded to my Instagram story and was like, hey, I have a friend from grad school who was this crazy community builder and has done all these wonky community building activities digitally and in person. And he doesn't even live in Southern California, but I feel like you guys would hit it off. And so me and Solon literally had like a Zoom call where we talked for 20 minutes. I'm like, oh my gosh, we have so much in common, da, da, da. And then we were like thinking about how to collaborate. We were like, let's write something together as like a step. And I've never even met Solon in real life. We've only met on Zoom. And I think like our mutual friend who connected us is our monkey bar, right? A lot of times you have resources, you have little monkey bars in your corner that you don't know how to connect. But like you're building relationships with really great people who can then help you get to that spot, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think those are like two different ways. And I think the reason that I talked about the job thing or the role thing is that's a lot of what I work on with people on coaching is people, I don't want to take this job because I want this other job. And I'm like, but do you have the skills to do that job? So when I had to go get a regular job after Sukoon, when I left my job in finance, I was like a senior associate. And then I went to founder. And then I was looking for roles, and at the marketing agency that I ended up taking a job in, I was really depressed because I took a junior paid media role, and my whole team was 23. Like my manager was 25 and I was 30. You know, it was like an ego cut for me. But like when I took the job, I was like, I need this skill set in paid media to get to where I want to be as a senior level marketer. And so I did that and I took that role, and then I basically fast tracked myself to then becoming a manager. Because I got that skill that I needed. That was the stepping stone to get to the role that I really wanted. And it took an extra like 6 months. And so like there's all these different ways that we all have monkey bars, and we have to make some sacrifices, you know. But the monkey bar can be like short, shorter sometimes than you want it to be, but it'll help you get to like your long game goal. You
know? Right. Yeah. And then tell me, before as we wrap up, tell me a little bit more about Nia Coaching. Who is your ideal client? You know, what is the archetype of the clients that you work with?
Yeah. So Nia coaching is my new love of my life. As I said earlier, Nia means intention in Urdu. And my coaching philosophy is that the best leaders align intention and impact. And my ideal client is somebody who holds a hyphenated identity. And so someone, you know, who's like first generation or is biracial maybe, or is just somebody who holds multiple identities. And ideally, I would, you know, I think that person would be like not right out of school, but have about 5 years of experience mm-hmm. and is really trying to navigate into being a leader. So either they already hold a leadership position or they want to hold a leadership position in like the near future or want to start something like a new project or a new brand. So right now I work with founders, mostly founders and managers. And yeah, I think, I mean, specifically being on this podcast, I would love to work with Brown Girls. Like that's the TLDR, you know, I think that's like really what it is. I've worked in so many corporate spaces, and I have actually never worked in almost 15 years. I've only had one job where I worked with a brown girl across wow. finance and marketing. Yeah.
Wow.
And so a lot of times I would get advice or mentorship from people who had no idea how I'm received in the world and how I move through the world. And not only like a brown girl, I also wear hijab. So I show up in the world with another nuance that people don't really understand. And so I think if you're looking for guidance or validation of how to get to the next level of wherever you're going, I would love, love, love to connect with you. And I actually have like a free consultation call, so you can grab on my website. And I also have like a pretty great free resource that I developed because of calls that I've done and clients that I've had. And so you could go to my website. It's just arshiakarani.com, and you could grab that free resource and join my newsletter. And hopefully it'll like get you thinking about some things that maybe you're experiencing and that coaching could help you navigate through or navigate to if you're not facing any current challenges.
I love that. And is your website the best way to contact you?
Yes. So you can go to, it's just arshiakarani.com. Yeah. And then you can kind of get to all my other resources like Instagram, LinkedIn, all that stuff from there.
Perfect. Yeah. We will link all of that in the show notes. Thanks so much, Arshi, for coming on the podcast. This was such a lovely conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and chat to all the brown girls trying to do their own thing.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. You can also connect with us on Instagram at @thebrowngirl_podcast and all other social media platforms listed in the show notes. Thank you again. I appreciate you being here.